As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yo, yo, welcome to another post-game edition of the Forum Club. I am your host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And I did not think it was possible. I made the joke last podcast that the OKC the first OKC game was anticlimactic after the anticlimactic Detroit game. But the Lakers figured it out. They figured out how to go to three consecutive overtimes with two different lottery teams. So, I mean, we were joking about it on Press Row, that this game was somehow going to find a way to go into overtime, and it actually happened. So three consecutive games in overtime for the Lakers. They get the 114-113 victory over the Thunder on Wednesday night to improve to 20-6 and 8-4 at home. But again, the real story here is a third consecutive overtime. It is the first time a team has won three consecutive overtimes since Minnesota in 2007. And it's the first time the Lakers have gone to three straight overtimes since 1991. Fun fact, that is before I was born. I was born in 1992. So that is just, hey, it's insane. You know, this is a once in a decade type thing. So enjoy it while it lasts. I know most fans were not enjoying it. And kind of living through the pain of the stress of this game. And so I'm not going to talk too much about this game because like LeBron, who didn't talk to the media tonight, I'm tired after three consecutive overtime games. So I'm just going to kind of glide through the box score here. LeBron had 25, 6, and 7. He ended up making the game sealing play. The Thunder had 4 seconds left in overtime. Down one, you know, you got a two-pointer, you win. And LeBron gets this deflection in the backcourt as the Thunder inbounding and ends up saving the ball. And the Thunder get, you know, like a half-court shot at the buzzer and miss. So LeBron saved the game, but he also saved the game by hitting the three-pointer to send it into overtime late. You know, just made big play after big play down the stretch. And I think, you know, depending on how you look at it, I think this is strengthening his MVP case because on the one hand, the Lakers shouldn't be in these positions, you know, even without Anthony Davis, who, so again, AD and Alex Caruso were out for this game. But even without those guys, like this Thunder team had 8 guys. They didn't have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's their best, you know, far and away their best player. And for them to take the Lakers, you know, to overtime again, you know, I think that could be held against LeBron in his MVP case, right? But you could also look at the flip side. Like, he made so many clutch plays and so many critical plays down the stretch of this game. And I think, again, just another crunch time win for him. The Lakers definitely got contributions from other guys, but LeBron was the driving force as he usually is. And I think, you know, deserves credit. And we'll get into his MVP case in a little bit. I want to touch on a story that went up today that I wrote that I think you guys will find interesting. But go through the rest of the box score here. Kuz, 15 points, 9 rebounds. Had another big rebounding game. I thought made some huge plays, you know, just cleaning up the glass, but, you know, defensively switches, his one offensive rebound, you know, scoring on that. And Kuz is making winning plays. And I think he's hitting a really nice groove in terms of his ability to just do multiple things, to wear multiple hats, to just, you know, do whatever a lineup needs. Kuz can kind of, he's a plug and play guy at this point where he can just adapt like a chameleon to a lineup and kind of, okay, well, we need some shooting. Okay, I'll spot up, you know, or move around and create openings. We need some cutting. We need some movement. I'll do that. We need to get out in transition. I'll leak out. You know, we need some rebounding. I'll crash the offensive glass. I'll box out my guy, clean up the defensive glass. So I think Kuz is played really well. Marc Gasol had a block taken away from him because he had 3 blocks at one point, finished with 2. But I was going to say that this was actually, you know, would have been the 5th time this season already that Marc has had 3 plus blocks, which he only did that 3 times total last year in Toronto. So I think Marc has acclimated himself well defensively. You know, Al Horford took it to him. So a few times that wasn't good. You know, Al Horford taking him in the low and mid post and facing up and hook shots and stuff. So it wasn't a great or necessarily even a good Marc Gasol defensive game, but I think overall he has looked a lot better on that end in terms of his timing and just understanding the Lakers scheme and what they want from him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Dennis, another good game from Dennis. 19 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. Like, you know, without AD, he is clearly the number 2 option on this team. You know, he and Trez are kind of 2A, 2B. But Dennis continues to play really well. And I think has looked much better over the past couple of weeks. Like, I think he's really, wasn't sure if it was just like a little hot streak from him or he's not going to shoot the ball as well as he's been shooting. But I do think he's found a very nice comfort zone within the offense. KCP struggled again, 2 for 6, 4 points. I wrote about that today, so I'll touch on that. But KCP is in a funk right now, 0-for-2 on threes and just not, you know, not shooting the ball well. Markieff Morris, I think, was the underrated MVP of this game for the Lakers. Hit a big 3 late, took a big charge, 9.6 rebounds, a steal in 25 minutes. I thought this was his best game of the season. And, you know, coming off of, you know, the game that Wes Matthews had last game, I thought it was nice to see. And Wes had another good game, you know, 10 points, hit a clutch 3 late. But I thought it was nice to see Markieff follow that up with, you know, like this is, there's a reason why people say the Lakers are the deepest team in the league or you know, at a minimum, but I think most people would say they're the deepest. And this is why, because you have guys like Markieff and Wes who would be playing for most playoff teams, would possibly be starting depending on the team. You know, not every team, not a majority of teams, but there are teams that, I mean, Wes was starting on the Bucks last year. You know, those guys are contributors. They're solid players. And yes, like they are the 10th and 11th, you know, guys on this team. But for most teams, they would be in the top 7 or 8. And for them to basically, you know, miss the last 4 games and be cold and then to come in and you know, perform the way they did the last 2 games, like, I think kudos to those two, and they deserve a shout out. Trez, another big game, 20 points, 8 of 10 shooting, only 4 rebounds, but did have a couple of blocks. THT, a bit of a regression from him in this game, 4 points, 2 of 8 shooting. This was one of those games where THT looked human, right? Like he looked like a 20-year-old, which he isn't, and that's fine, right? It's not, you know, to criticize him, it's just, these are the growing pains you have as a 20-year-old in the NBA on a contending team. So I think, you know, tonight was one of those nights, went 0-for-3 on threes, and you know, the Lakers just went 10-35, 28%. But I want to transition into a story that I wrote today, the second edition of State of the Lakers, which is my check-in with the team every 10 to 12 games or so. So in this case, it had been 14 games, so a little bit longer than normal. But this was heading into today's game, so some of these things have not been updated. But I bounced around 10 different storylines. And, you know, so first, LeBron's growing MVP claim. I think that the MVP discussion is very difficult because there is no definitive criteria, right? Like, is it the best player in the league? Because then LeBron would have like 7, 8, 9, 10 MVPs instead of the 4 he has. Is it the best player statistically that season? You know, is it the guy who's leading in Raptor and RPM and PIPM and you know, now the LeBron metric and all these different metrics? Like, is it that player? Is it the player on the best team? You know, is it just who's the best player on the best team? Or is it the best narrative? And we've seen that over the past decade. You know, narrative has played into it. Best player, you know, kind of standing as the best player in the league has played into it. Best player statistically, best player on the best team. Like, all those things have factored in to some extent in the MVP race. And it really changes year by year, you know, candidate by candidate. But if we're taking those four as sort of the measures that, you know, you can usually group an MVP into at least one of those four categories, right? Like, let's just take Giannis last season. Best player on the best team, for sure. Best narrative, that's kind of subjective. I don't know if I personally don't think Giannis was the best narrative last year. It probably would have been LeBron just winning a fifth MVP, you know, at 35. But, you know, there could have been other, you know, Luka was coming up. Like, so I think the best narrative was kind of unclear last year. Best player statistically that season, yes, it was Giannis. And best player in the league, I think that was up for debate. Most people were saying it was between LeBron and Kawhi. I think most people had Giannis third or fourth in that discussion. So, you know, for Giannis, it was probably like 2 to 2.5 of those four measures. Giannis checked the boxes. This season, I think LeBron checks 3 of the 4. I think he's the best player on the best team. I know you guys aren't going to fight me on that. I think he's the best player in the league, which, you know, he reclaimed that last season in the bubble, if there was any doubt on that. And I think most people, if you had to win one game or one playoff series, you would pick LeBron. I just don't, you know, maybe people disagree with that, but I just think most people would pick LeBron until someone beats him in the postseason. You know, following last season's run, I just don't see how you don't pick him. And then from a narrative perspective, again, this is subjective. And, you know, there are several compelling storylines. You know, what Nikola Jokic is doing in Denver, what Joel Embiid is doing, like those guys really stepping up. And I think, you know, most people had them in that 5 to 10 range when ranking players. And those guys have been top 5 players this season. So them kind of taking that leap is very difficult and very impressive. But to me, the best narrative is LeBron, you know, kind of in a way similar to what Tom Brady did in Tampa, but being frankly even better than Tom Brady was, you know, this past season. Of course, there's an age gap there, but, you know, defying Father Time and winning his fifth MVP at 36 years old, I think that is a great narrative. That is special, that's historic. You know, it would make him the oldest MVP winner. It would kind of, I think, just be a nice feather in his, you know, cap of accomplishments in his career. You know, and, you know, if he wins a fifth ring this year and gets a fifth finals MVP, that takes him from 4-4-4 to 5-5-5. So I think that, you know, like, again, if you're going to go by the advanced metrics, perhaps, you know, Nikola Jokic, Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, like some of these guys have potentially more of an argument than LeBron. But I do think if you look at the kind of buckets that people usually pull from for MVP, LeBron has at least 2, if not 3 of the 4 primary ones. So I think he has a strong MVP case. I know ESPN just did a media straw poll that I participated in, where Tim Bontemps asked 100 different media members for their MVP ranking. I had LeBron first, and he finished first by, I think, almost 100 points over Joel Embiid, who was second. So I think things are lining up for LeBron to get MVP. It is a third of the season, so you know we got to see what happens over the next 70% of the season or so. But I do think that he is in a good spot. So a couple other things I bounced around the new 9-man rotation. I think Frank Vogel has an interesting choice to make with Wes Matthews. Is he going to stretch it to 10? Is it going to be 9.5, where maybe Wes plays depending on the matchup? Like if they're playing a wing heavy team, maybe Wes gets some minutes. Is Markieff just shut out entirely? Right? Like I don't know. These are tough decisions. And the 9-man rotation has worked, but Wes and Markieff have played well over the past couple of games, and we'll see what happens on Friday against Memphis. Like, is AD back? Is Alex Crusoe back? What do those guys look like in that context? Dennis Schroeder, his defense has stood out, and we know why he was brought in. He was brought in off for his offense, to be that third scorer, to be a secondary playmaker and pick and roll guy next to LeBron and late in games. But his defense, having a career year defensively in multiple metrics, according to Synergy, is having his best defensive season of his career. So I think, he's by no means perfect. He's not an elite defender. The Lakers are actually entering tonight where 9.2 points per 100 possessions better with him off the floor defensively, which is the biggest gap on the team. So it hasn't necessarily materialized in the numbers for the Lakers. But I think, Dennis is having a really good year defensively, and it has been a pretty big surprise. Rim protection has actually become a concern. So when I did the first State of the Lakers, at that time, the Lakers had dropped off a little bit from, some of last year's top four, top five, top six numbers to like 7, 8, 9 range. Now they've plummeted to 19th in field goal percentage allowed in the restricted area, and 19th in field goal percentage allowed within 5 feet. Last season, they were top five in both categories. So there has been some slippage in terms of the rim protection. I think some of those concerns of, can Marcus Gasol and Montrezl Harrell protect the rim at the same level that JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard did, those have played out. Those are legitimate. It's not, at first it was not the case, but over the past few weeks, the Lakers have slipped up in those areas. And it's not just percentage. It's they're allowing the second most makes and attempts in the restricted area. So i.e. 29th in both categories. Last year, they were 11th in makes allowed and 15th in attempts allowed. And they're also 26th in points in the paint allowed after ranking 8th last season. So again, it's not just the percentage that has decreased. It is they're letting guys get to the rim way more than last season. Looking at the data, I actually put a table in the article, percentage of shots at rim when player X is on the court and field goal percentage allowed at rim when player X is on the court. What was interesting to me that I saw was the bench actually does a better job of preventing shots at the rim. If you look at the data, the starters, all five starters are bottom five in the rotation in terms of percentage of shots at rim. So that means teams are getting to the rim against the starting unit. But field goal percentage allowed at the rim, that's where it starts to differentiate a little bit, where you still have Dennis and KCP at the bottom there. They're two of the bottom three. But that's where Montrezl Harrell really sticks out. He is second worst on the team, allowing 65.5% shooting at the rim per cleaning the glass. And cleaning the glass's definition of shots at the rim are shots within 4 feet. So that's where, you look at Montrezl Harrell at 65.5% versus Marcus Gasol at 62.4%. 3% is a big gap. AD at 63.3%, that 2% is a big gap. So, Montrezl Harrell has clearly struggled in that rim protector role, and defenses are eating against him when he's out there. And because you know, I looked at it with AD at the five, the Lakers are only allowing 53.7%, which is an elite number and, you know, very, very good. So AD at the five has worked. Whereas on the flip side, the Harold Davis minutes have allowed 71.9%, which is just atrocious. That's 6% worse than Trez overall. So, you know, Lakers got to figure that out. But I think that the Harold Davis minutes have been a bit of a disaster defensively so far in terms of protecting the rim. That said, the Lakers are first in the in defense by a mile. They've been first, the number one spot in defensive rating since January 13th, so basically a month. The gap between them and Philly at number two is the same gap as Philly at number two and San Antonio at number nine. So that shows you the type of gap that the Lakers have there with the number one spot. And aside from the rim protection, which has been a bit of a struggle, they are top eight in the other five shooting zones. So non-restricted paint area, they're first. Mid-range, they're eighth. Left and right corner threes, they're first. And above the break threes, they're eighth. And overall, they're first in three-point defense. So the reason why, I mean, for those asking, how are they still first, despite being so bad at protecting the rim, it's because they've been so good in the other areas. Now, three-point defense is a little... There's a lot of variance in that, and that can regress. So, you know, part of that is just teams missing. And, you know, so Lakers can't really count on being first in three-point defense necessarily all season. But if you're wondering why they've been so good, that's why. Also wrote on THT and just kind of how he's arrived and he's emerged in the rotation. I wrote about, and this played out tonight, the Lakers are 12-0. When they make more threes than their opponent, 7-6 when they don't. They made more threes than the Thunder tonight. That moved them to 13-0 now when making more threes than their opponent. So the gist of that was just, I think they need to start taking more threes. You know, and if you look at the seven offenses ahead of them in offensive rating, all of them are taking over four threes or over four more threes per 100 possessions than the Lakers. And I just think, to keep up with some of those teams, you know, looking at the Bucks, the Clippers, the Nets, the Jazz, the Nuggets, those are five of the seven teams ahead of them. Those are probably their five biggest threats in the league right now. And all of those teams take and make more threes than the Lakers. So I do think that when looking at a potential playoff series against one of those five, you know, the three-point battle is going to be important. And the Lakers need to do a better job of optimizing their offense. Then I got into lineup data, KCP and his struggles, and then AD and his regression at the free throw line, which I think people have been too hard on AD and his slow start and criticizing him. And, you know, I think overall he's still been a top 10 player when you factor in defense. You know, some of the metrics paint him right there in that top five, top 12. But you know, when looking at the totality of his numbers and his defensive contribution, I think he's been a top 10 player. Now, I would say he's been more in that 8-10 range, where I think after the postseason last year, we were probably looking at him at like 3 or 4, right? Like behind LeBron and, you know, maybe Kawhi, maybe Giannis. But he was right there with those guys. And I think now he's a little bit behind that pack. You know, I think he's fallen behind Jokic and Embiid, but we'll see if that's temporary. But the free throw shooting has been weird because he's a career, you know, basically 80% free throw shooter in the regular season, 84% in the postseason. He's never shot below 75% and has actually shot above 79% in six of his eight seasons. So he's a really good free throw shooter, especially for, you know, I know he doesn't like to consider himself a center. He's basically a center. And for a center to shoot, you know, 80%+, that's pretty good. But this season he's shooting 70%. And it's really after the first 11 games, he was at 77%, which is decent. But he's dropped to 66% over his next 10 games. So something's up with AD's free throw shooting. Got to figure that out. But if you want to read more, you know, I go way more in depth on all of these topics on my latest State of the Lakers piece. That is on The Athletic. If you are not subscribed, you can subscribe off of one of my tweets. I tweeted the story out multiple times, retweeted it a couple times, but I definitely recommend checking that out. I think basically everything I wrote still applies after tonight. Like LeBron's MVP claim grew. Nine-man rotation, it's too early to tell because they haven't had the full 11-man rotation. You know, rim protection is still a concern. THT had an off night, but overall has been playing pretty well over the past week and a half. You know, the three-point shooting, I think that was an issue tonight. And KCP had another cold game. So pretty much everything I think is still evergreen and probably will be for at least a week or so. So if you have not checked that out, be sure to do so. Otherwise, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram at Jovan Buha. I'm actually putting together a mailbag for Friday. So if you are listening to this and it's before Friday, be sure to ask me any question you have with the Lakers on Twitter, and I will do my best to include it on our upcoming mailbag. Not mailbag episode of the podcast, but a mailbag on theathletic.com. And yeah, if you have not subscribed to this podcast, you can do so at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now. You can do so on The Athletic. Be sure to rate and review. And we appreciate you guys listening. I will be back Friday night after the Memphis game. Hopefully not another overtime. I cannot take another overtime. I will be in a bad mood if it goes to a fourth straight overtime. So hoping that doesn't happen.